Today, it's Edwin's Monday Evening Property Rant. Hello again, it's Martin North from Digital Finance Analytics. Welcome to this post covering finance and property news. It's Monday and Edwin is back, only a few days after last Wednesday, but so much to talk about, Edwin. Welcome.
Look, Martin, it is what it is. I was more concerned about your roof and with the storms that you've been having, the wind and everything. So have you still got your toupee on, Martin? Did you lose your toupee is the question.
Oh, it was horrendous over the weekend. We had massive storms barreling in. It was a red wind warning, which is almost unheard of in the UK. And my temporary roof, which of course is scaffolding and tin and all sorts of other things, was groaning and banging, and I thought, oh, the whole lot's going to come down. But anyway, the good news is it's still intact, and we didn't get any water in. And interestingly, the work on the roof has already made a significant difference to the temperature in the property. They've put insulation now effectively up against the rafters, and it's lifted the temperature significantly in the house. So I hadn't realized just how bad. Now, I had insulation above the ceiling levels, you know, at that level, but in the roof space, no. So they've put a huge amount in, and boy, it's made a massive difference. And I'm still in one place, and my toupee is still intact, so I'm pleased to say.
Well, now you know how the people from Opal Towers and Mascot Towers felt when the building started to move.
Oh, I tell you what, the wind and the weather here is just incredible. It's the second storm in 2 weeks, 2 or 3 weeks. No, 2 weeks, that's right. If I hadn't had the roof done, I would have been, my water feature would have expanded without any other issues that we had with trees and things. So anyway, but look, there's so much to talk about. I mean, where do you start? Maybe we should start here, Edwin, with Jim's mowing.
Yeah, good old Jim. He's black band the ex premier of Victoria. It's a no-go zone, and apparently from what I read in the Daily Mail article there, it's Jim's business isn't the only business that's not opening the doors to Daniel Andrews. And so it's interesting. It's more of get out of Victoria, but this is the crazy stuff that we get up to here in Australia, I guess. And you begin to ask yourself, I mean, am I living in dystopia? Am I living in another dimension? What happened to the Australia we knew that we grew up with? Where did it go? The last 3-4 years have absolutely turned things upside down, inside out, back to front. So now with the advent of AI, it's even going to get wackier, right? With not knowing what's real, what's not real. But so I mean, each to their own. Businesses they can allow the patronage, whatever patronage they want, or what patronage they don't want. So it is interesting. And we seem to be having a lot of governments walk many things back. But look, it's the beginning of it's for me, Martin. If you remember last week, we spoke about it was just after my birthday and my dad's birthday wish at the WeChat Chat Temple. So it looks like my wishes are sort of starting to come true. one down, 349 to go in people losing the licenses, maybe, hopefully.
Well, this was the tweet, right? Matter on foot at the moment. Licensing charge investigated for misappropriation of trust account money pertaining to a deposit for the sale of a property. Maybe it's the first sign of things to come in terms of better regulation. But I have to tell you, Edwin, that more broadly, I think you've got your finger on the pulse here in terms of some of the stupidity that we're seeing, some of the disastrous decisions that have been taken for many years by politicians and all sorts of people who should know better are actually now coming home to roost. I mean, the media this week has been reporting financial stress rising as high costs continue. Of course, the onslaught of higher housing payments, coupled with a lot of other cost of living pressures, are really impacting people. That's according to Equifax, and also the personal insolvency figures from the Australian Financial Securities Authority. And they're highlighting the fact that people are under significant financial pressure. Well, I've been talking about that for a long, long time. Of course, they're cutting back on their spending. The ABS showed that the spending rose 2.8% in the year, down from 4%. But of course, that's with massive amounts of migration. And there was a 9 percentage point decrease to 60% in the level of Australians who remained financially ambitious, while half say paying down debt or moving beyond living pay cycle to pay cycle is their biggest financial priority in the coming year. But look, that's really just a context. I don't know whether you saw Matt Barry's amazing video. He made a speech. It was quite a long speech. It's on YouTube, called Flat Out Like a Nation Sinking. But he called out 3 points. The first, of course, the massive willful destruction of Australia by Australian policymakers, beginning with energy. If you want to cripple a nation's productivity, you target its power supply first, make it expensive, make it unreliable, above all, make abundant energy resources politically toxic. Take a resource-rich nation and, instead of harnessing its wealth, export it at rock-bottom prices, sells it without collecting a cent in return, then force citizens to pay premium prices for unreliable alternatives. Oh, dear, absolutely. Secondly, he called out willful destruction and social cohesion thanks to the massively stupid management of the housing market and mass immigration. Turn the housing market into a casino for foreign capital. Make housing so expensive that young couples abandon any thought of starting a family. Force multiple generations to live under one roof, not of choice, but of necessity. And create a system so twisted that a child born today could spend a lifetime just saving for a deposit. And then he identifies a third issue, government propaganda, as the third area of willful destruction being wrought on Australians. Silence any resistance, manipulate data, conceal damage, create a ministry of propaganda, pass laws punishing dissent, force people to identify themselves online so you can jail them for speaking up. Ladies and gentlemen, this isn't a manual for national suicide. This is Australia in 2024. I mean, that's pretty powerful stuff. And Edwin, just to sort of keep the theme going for a second, I made a show called Australia is Stuffed last week. It was actually based on an article from John Kehoe. And John Kehoe, of course, at the AFR, really put his finger on all of the critical issues as well, talking about the stupidity of politics, the two sides of the same, bird and everything that we've been talking about. And that show, when I made this, was 51,000 views, which is pretty amazing. It's now at 60,000 views, my most popular show this year so far. So there's a lot of people saying, whoa, things are not looking good.
No, there are a lot of angry people, but look, Martin, how far does that anger get us? Look, I don't want to be I don't want to be the stick in the mud. I don't want to be the one spilling everybody else's milk. But we've got who we voted for, and this is just the aftermath of the decisions that we've been making. I mean, not all, but unfortunately, we've from the last two state cycles, and also the federal cycles that I've noted. Now, you could correct me if I'm wrong, but there's been less votes going to independents than in the previous elections. And one would have thought that we'd be have a lot more stronger independents in Parliament, apart from the Teals and those factions that have been bought out by the major parties anyway. So it's it, unless and until the unfortunate thing is until it comes knocking on our front door, a lot of people, she'll be right, mate. Unfortunately, Martin, is and this is just my personal observation, until that happens to a lot of people, the Australian population just don't seem to really wake up. We can make a lot of noise, we can say a lot of things, but how many people are still walking into silly decisions? How many people are still walking into silly economic decisions and also housing decisions and all sorts of decisions because they really haven't been affected to the point where they can get so angry to really do something about it. They just sort of go along with the tide. But then again, it for many decades, Australia has been known as the lucky country, has been known as the laid back country as well. The unfortunate thing, and it's going to be a little bit. Perhaps this is the final cycle that that we stand up and let the major parties get a hiding. That's what they need. Both need to get a hiding, at the next state and federal elections. And for the voices of the independents and the smaller parties to rise up and start bringing about a change. Until that happens, it's just same old, same old, but Martin.
Well, that's right. So both sides are partly to blame. And in fact, Johnny Keogh's article make that point that, you need to look back over 20, 30 years. And of course, I've been saying this for some time, Edwin, that the things that are hitting people today, they were decisions taken a decade, 2 decades, 3 decades ago. Neither side of politics really want to deal with the critical issues that we've got. They want to sort of battle with each other and look as though they're doing stuff when, of course, we know that there's a massive set of issues. And it's interesting, I don't know whether you saw this, Tarek actually put this up, the per capita migration rate comparison, comparing it with, for example, Northern and Western European averages, the Australian average 19,001 to 2025, and even the LNP proposal shows you that, the current migration rate at 2% is way over the top. And it's interesting, of course, that Dutton has now pedaled back his commitment, right? So the federal opposition leader, Peter Dutton, has backtracked on his commitment to bring net migration down to 160,000, refusing to recommit the target he set back in May, and said it would depend on economic settings that they inherit. And Tarek Brewer said, the coalition will not set a target for net migration until after the election, opposition leader Peter Dutton has said. Dutton has caved on cutting migration, as many of you said he would. And so that's sort of that side of politics. And the other side of politics, the Labour Party has an Albanese problem. Won't vote for Albanese again. He only cares about himself, from somebody polled at the SMH Resolve poll. You're right. Both sides of politics, both major parties are equally to blame. Neither of them are doing the things they should be doing in terms of actually thinking more broadly about the situation that we're in and what we need to do. And the trouble is, Edwin, at the moment, you're right, they'll just continue to sort of battle with each other and fiddling while Rome burns. And in the meantime, real ordinary people are getting caught in the crossfire. Rates are higher than they perhaps should have been. It's interesting that the RBA is facing mixed signals. They'll probably stand firm on rates tomorrow because I think they'll have to. And the only, I don't know whether it's good news or bad news, but just to tell you, Edwin, that we're not the only place, Australia, that's got a problem. Angela Rayner in the UK, so she's the Deputy Prime Minister in the UK, came on to Sky yesterday over the weekend and basically, in the same breath, said we have a massive housing shortage, so we're going to build 1.5 million homes to house 3.4 million people. The interviewer then said, but 2.5 million of those will be immigrants, won't they? And where are those immigrants going to live? And she concludes in the next sentence, we have plenty of housing. So the good news or the bad news is politicians around the world are messed up with a lack of clarity of strategy, dealing with the issues in the completely the wrong way. And in the meantime, you've got to come back to it. Ordinary people are really being taken to the cleaners here. The democratic process should work. but only if people actually come out and do things other than, as you say, oh, she'll be right. Well, I don't think she'll be right unless we actually begin to take ownership of the political process. And the next election, I think, will be quite critical. But the question is, will there be real choice, one side or the other? And will either party come out with policies that will actually tackle some of the underlying issues we have, which is poor productivity? And we can talk about why there's poor productivity in just a second or two. The fact that the cost of living is rising very fast. The big businesses, of course, are getting massive tax support from the governments. Who's going to tackle that? Well, as soon as they start tackling that, they have significant issues potentially, because, of course, those governments reacting to all of the influence from big corporate. And you saw this week with the cash issue and CBA, as we discussed that last Wednesday, and charging $3 for cash and then getting reversing that quite quickly. But really, you wonder. And at the end of it, there's a very important set of observations here. Public sector job surges are popping up the economy. This is showing what's happening. Basically, it's all public jobs or non-market jobs. McKinsey basically said that the economy is in emergency state. And in fact, we're way, way down the league in terms of productivity. We're 30, more than 30th out of 35 rich countries, and falling. Public spending is at a new high. This cartoon got it quite nicely. Don't worry, Albo, it's very carefully calibrated, says Jim Chalmers. When, of course, they're just spraying money everywhere to try and support the economy. And by the way, also, I'd say the state governments are as bad as well. And you can see there that the public spending as a share of Australian GDP has gone through the roof. Oh, and by the way, just to complete the story, spending includes potentially more Labor support for power bill discounts. So the Albanese government is mulling a third round of power bill discounts. Remember, of course, that the RBA looks through those in terms of inflation. And Shadow Treasurer Angus Taylor said Dr. Chalmers had used the energy rebates to cynically manipulate the headline inflation number. I mean, you couldn't make this stuff up, Edwin, could you?
No, look, it's really let's for lack of a better word, let's screw it up and then use public money to fix it. Or to put no, hold on, no, I rephrase that. I'll take that back. Let's screw it up, and then we'll use public money to set up a committee to think about the many different ways that we can fix it, but not just yet, until we get closer to the election, so we can make a promise that it's going to be fixed what we screwed up in the first place, and we're going to use your money to fix it. But hey, it's not the economy, stupid. It's those that are leading it are stupid. Look, taking a couple of steps back, also, Martin, is remember when we spoke about the previous federal election, we said that the lever in order to maintain the property prices was going to be immigration. One of the levers was going to be immigration. We were on the money. We were way ahead, and we said. And I said back then also, and we said back then that if many believed that the Libs were going to act anything, we're going to act anyway differently than what the Labor Party have over the last 3 years. This just proves our point of what we raised back at that time, Martin. This is just proves the point. It was always going to be pulled. It was always on. Whoever came to power was going to pull. And and that just vindicates what we said back then. And let's also not forget, Martin, with the fact that we reduce less and less and less of our manufacturing and productivity, and we've been relying on education visas, tourist visas, hospitality shot, our exports. Are somewhat many of them are on shaky ground as we stand. But at the end of the day, don't forget what the Wiltshire Chatterer said last year, towards the end of last year, and they said that we were going to be in order to keep inflation figures down, we're going to become the dumping ground of China, and we're going to be importing a lot of cheap crap because America's not going to want it, and more so now they can't dump it over in America anymore anyway. Canada don't want it, and look at it, everywhere you go now, everywhere you turn, you look left, right, and you look in front of you, and you look at in your rear vision mirror, and you see a BYD, burn your dream vehicle, EV, or they're popping up like mushrooms. We're just becoming a dumping ground. We don't make anything ourselves, and it's going to be interesting to see. Well, but then again, we already know because as many of the building companies or those that supply the building industry that we spoke about before, they've also been sold off, or they've been privatized and sold off to overseas interests. And guess where we're going to end up getting our gyprock and our concrete and everything else from? Otherwise, there were companies that were had a high reputation because they were we were manufacturing that here. Now it's going to be manufactured over in Vietnam, China, and also in India. We're going to be importing crap. That's the unfortunate thing, Martin. That is the unfortunate thing, and this is why we do the show to get to put our people, our followers, and our viewers up to speed, ahead of the curve. And again, like I said, this Dutton's walking back is the so-called cutting down the levels of immigration. I mean, that was BS from the beginning, from day one. It's in the pipeline. They're not. It's one would think that we're a bit conspiratorial, and one would think that none of the libs or the labs are in control. Who is in control, Martin? Who is in control of our government?
Good question. Well, I think that the truth is, of course, that the Treasury has been driving high migration for a long, long time as the key growth lever. The Australian economy is getting narrower and narrower in terms of its base. It's sliding down the list as we showed a couple of weeks ago. And so there's nothing that really can be done unless they change some of the fundamentals. But those fundamentals would require significant decisions to be taken, tax reform, for example, and maybe rebalancing the corporate tax regime versus the personal tax regime towards reducing personal taxation rather than actually at the moment, where, of course, corporates are paying less and less tax and individuals are paying more and more tax. We've never been more taxed as a nation. And in the meantime, of course, the government debt continues to rise despite what they're saying. And, it's a bit of a mess. But we should talk about property, I guess, because, it is the property rant. And again, I would say that this is another example of words and figures differing, right? So, look, here's an article from Nyla Sweeney that says, glut forces home sellers to chop prices. Stock on the market has been accumulating because properties have not been selling, according to Louis Christopher, and he's talking about the stockpile there. So, that's sort of one end of the spectrum. However, as with all of these things, it's more complicated than these high level, well, frankly, quite annoyingly not very clear stories about what's going on. You've got this story here about auction was busy. Well, there were some people there. So, what's going on, Edwin? Who's right?
Well, look, we're both right. We're both in from a different, because we're looking at it. We're looking at the phenomenon from a or what's what's unfolding from two different perspectives, right? What we look at are things the current market, the more the what's happening on the ground at grassroots levels in different markets. When you amalgamate, when you bring it all together, when you gel it all together, and you that, and that's what the mainstream report on is in globo figures, as opposed to what we should be, what people in individuals should be really looking at. This is in the Northwest region, 10 registered bidders, but but we look at this, and people say, well, so what? Where is it? Okay, I'll give you a little bit more of a heads up. This is a three bedroom house, right? Three bedroom house, one bathroom in Carlingford. I mean, this is insane. This is just around the corner from bloody Dundas and Dundas Valley. So this is, the tail end of where the Wechat Chatterers want to basically live. But what the interesting thing here, Martin, is the 10 registered bidders. The agent tells me that six were very, very active, and obviously the reserve was 1.9, and it went all the way to 2,000,085 for a 3-bedroom, 1-bathroom house. That is a small house in that area, and it fetched almost 2.1 million. But as we've been saying, the why is this important, and with these conversations that I have with these agents, they're important because if you look at the picture, and there was other conversations that I had with the agent and have been having with other agents in nearby areas, and that they've seen a surge over the last few weeks of the Silent Tigers. And what have we been talking about over the last few weeks, few months, with regard to the Silent Tigers? 2025 is going to be where the Silent Tigers are going to roar. And it's really the Silent Tigers in many parts of Sydney, this area, the northwest region of Sydney, they're going to take it, and they're going to go toe to toe with the WeChat Chatterers. But there's a lot of money coming in from India for the reasons that we shared last week, and that's basically they made a lot of money in the property market over there as well. The prices have swelled by anywhere from 200 to 300, 400%. There's some of the properties that apartment buildings that the many of the Silent Tigers that live here bought over there off the plan at 400 or 500, and now they're being offered one anywhere between 1 to 1.3 million dollars for the complete apartments. Now they're coming to completion. So now we're going to see this, as I say, that where the Silent Tigers are going to be roaring in 2025. It's a watch this space moment. In other parts of Sydney, yes, numbers have really doubled, you could say. There's like you've got your Maroubra, for example. 3 months ago, there were 12 homes for sale in Maroubra, or thereabouts. If you look at Maroubra, including Maroubra Junction, and with not including the surrounding suburbs, you could possibly count last week. You could count up to 32 homes for sale around there. You had a lot of choice, and you had a lot of choice. But it also started. Entry point for some of these were at 3.5 million. So the markets that are really somewhat stagnant is anything above your 2.5, 3 million entry level point. So they've sort of stalled a bit, but now you've got a retraction in numbers as well. So that's going to change things a little bit more. But then the other thing that you've got happening now is this confidence level, where in a lot of the auctions, and a number of the people that I speak with that have been holding auctions in the more affluent areas, they're noticing young people attending auctions, and they're attending auctions and buying first homes anywhere between 2.5 and 3.5 million dollars. And they sort of the agents sort of walk away, as they tell me, they walk away, sort of scratching their heads as to where some of these young people in the late to early 30s. Are coming up with your $3 million, your $3.5 million to bid against properties. In one auction in particular, over in Maroubra, a house went for $4,570,000, and it was a young IT engineer. As I said to the fellow who was sharing that with me, I said more than likely it was a Kryptonian, made a shitload of money in crypto, and now he's cashing in, and he's going toe to toe with a with a you know, with a with a with another local fellow there, and that was an older gentleman that is obviously upsizing, but the older gentleman won the oh, yeah. Yeah, won the property. But the interesting point there is that there's a lot of money slowly transitioning from your stocks and your bitcoins and the money that they've made because of the Trump effect, as I call it, or the American elections and the way it unfolded. So these are and this is what's happening along the markets. Now later on, we're going to be talking about the numbers on market and how they've sort of retreated in the last 2 weeks, or just over 1,000 properties got taken off the market last week, and almost the same, if not a little bit more, this week again. So this is what's happening on a at grassroots levels, but every market is acting differently. My fear for the young people, the young families, the first time buyers that want to get into the market and they're just looking for their first property to get into the market in the Sydney region. And I'm not talking about in general terms, I'm talking about homes that anywhere between your 900 and your 1.2, 1.3 million dollars. That market is it's still very strong in a lot of areas. At that price point, and they're going to be in greater demand the first quarter of 2025 is my call, because of the as I said, the money that's coming over from India, and also more migration and more professionals coming over from India as well, Martin. And this is where Matt Barry and everybody else, yourself, Tarek, myself, we've been talking about, and it's an open door policy with all that. And they need the interesting thing is that the governments need these call them high net worth individuals or individuals that are coming in, because they're not your typical migrants that were coming in from 10 years ago, 15 years ago, 20 years ago with very little in the back pocket. These are wealthy individuals. With a lot more money, and they're ready, willing, and able to buy something first cab off the rank as soon as they find out and figure out where they would like to live and where the communities are basically centered, and those markets just skyrocket. So you've got this influence coming, and this is what Matt Barry's talking about. This is what you and I have been talking about, and it's a huge danger and a huge problem for our locals that are wanting to get into the market, Martin. And this is what, and then the stupid thing is, obviously the catch 22 for the government is, they want to pump more high rise development, but the people that the majority of the people that buy into high rise development are not your locals, because your locals are very very astute. And they don't want to live in badly engineered, badly built, dog boxes. And who's the next dummy to buy? Unfortunately, are they going to be the new migrants, because they see it as new, shiny, and they think, and they don't know the history. In most cases, they don't know the history of how we build, or how many of these complexes have been built, because the local people don't want to. From a general consensus, they don't want to live in these dog boxes. They want to have the bit of land, because that's that was and is the great Australian dream that's becoming further and further away, and turning into an absolute nightmare for many of our young people.
Well, that's right, and the Australian dream is still intact amongst many locals, or they can't access it now because it's too expensive to access. But I guess people coming from overseas will have a different lens. Maybe they're used to living in more crowded conditions and living in, in a high-rise environment. If you go through some of the major cities up in China, for example, you can see similar examples of significant high-rise development. So in a way, what's happening is a sort of a transformation of the Australian landscape, particularly in its major cities. And it's not necessarily good for those Australian cities, nor indeed for lifestyle. It's interesting, of course, we've highlighted this before, that in some areas now people are having to move away from Sydney, for example. It's too expensive. And I guess other people are coming in. It's interesting, though, you talk about who's right. And, if you compare this article in Macro Business from Leith talking about the auction collapse code red for Sydney house prices, right? And talking about the probability of prices falling. Now, it's worth, of course, highlighting the fact there's a bit of a lag between some of these numbers as reported and what's going on. And then, of course, if you look at the other side, your very famous Tom Pannis Index, which on the 23rd of November had a clearance rate of 3 out of 12. On the 30th of November had a clearance rate of 2 out of 10 sold. But the last one, the most recent one, clearance rate 7 out of 10 sold. So, well, you know, whilst 50% of auctions were cancelled prior to last week in Sydney, and why the Australian government is failing us, clearance rates still up there. So make that of what you will, Edwin, make it what you will.
Well, that's it, man. And this is the whole thing. Like it's I don't know what Tom's got to say. I haven't watched the video. I just took a snapshot of the post, but they actually didn't listen to the to his commentary. But it would have been rather interesting. And what do you say? What do you say? But the way I interpret it is the Trump effect. So it's like people are becoming more bullish with the economy in general. When you look at the figures that Lee talks about, obviously those numbers and those figures in many cases are lagging by 72 days at best case scenario. That's the CoreLogic lag. And that's so we've got a lag of the reports. But if you recall last week's rant, we brought up that post that Catherine Cashmore put up, and you look at the actual figure as an Englobo figure for from your if you could call it a fall from the 2020 to 2024 peak in the Sydney market as per that those figures it's noted that from the peak has come down 0.05%, which is really not a great deal, right? But you make a lot of people make a big song and dance about it. So what we say is, well, you've just got to be very, very careful as to what you choose to buy, where you choose to buy, and how you choose to buy. So we've had many shows on in showing our followers and viewers as to the many ways that you can approach it. But So again, like you said, who's right? Who's right and who's wrong? Are we headed for if we just purely focus on macro business articles, shit, the world's going to end. And 3,000 posts on Twitter will tell you the same. Posties, if you want to call them, will tell you the same, and they'll all you can have a you can basically send out invitations and have a party that the world's going to end party somewhere in the western suburbs in the Blacktown LJ. Or do you go with the Tom Pannis Index and say, shit, the market's heating up again? I mean, it's all relative to who's wanting to get out as well. And what did he sell? How was it sold? What was the price point? But in general terms, Martin, it's as I've shared before, the market is very, very patchy, and this is where both buyers and sellers have to be very cautious as to how they navigate forward. But one of the common themes, though, is the simple fact that most selling agents themselves don't know what the hell they're doing. And they are a detriment to their own clients, and also they are an impediment to buyers trying to make a rational decision. And unfortunately, they get given the wrong information, they get given the wrong advice, they get given the wrong facts, or very little facts. Yes, it is caveat emptor, but there's still a duty of care to be not to withhold information that you know to be a material fact. And this is what we're seeing, and this is that's been quite a number of my posts on X of late. The many from properties that I've been invited to assist people that have made some dreadful decisions, woeful decisions, where a simple what they thought was going to be a simple damp stain on a wall ends up being a full bedroom and bathroom renovation because of the termites have absolutely taken to the framework, and the only thing that's holding that up is the external fibre.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, you know, we could go on for quite a long time on the stupidity of Build to Rent. NAB came out and actually said that it wasn't necessarily going to solve the problem at all. We spoke out last week about the master builders talking about we're going to build more, and you know, we need more, we need more builders. I mean, we're just going around the side again. But I think the bottom line is, if you are thinking of buying property, you need to go cautious. You need to look at the granularity detail on the ground. You need to do due diligence. There's still good value there if you look carefully. There are others that are massively overpriced. There's some property that's really, really poorly built. And again, do your due diligence. You know, we keep saying it, Edwin, because it's continues to be universally true. You cannot take these high-level stories and try and extrapolate down to an individual location. You need to look at the information locally and go from there. And I think that's, you know, the thing we keep saying. I think it's continues to be totally true. Now, before we get into the numbers, I just want to play this short video because this was absolutely astonishing. And you know, you might want to talk to this as we play this, because this is actually something which shouldn't be allowed to exist, but it does exist.
Yeah, this was a major issue. I actually reported that to the authorities, and try to get some action to happen there. This is a shopping center. Many the Sydneysiders will know it's in Carlingford, and this is in the food court. What you see there, those white blocks that you see there at the bottom of the screen, that's actually Hebel, and when you cut Hebel up, it releases silica. And yeah, which is a toxic substance, and it's it's bad. So it's gonna it'll affect different people in different ways. It's like you sort of smoke a packet of cigarettes, and next thing you know, you've got lung cancer. Then you meet people that I met people over in Cuba that have been smoking from the age of 5. Smoking cigars till the and they're 105 and they're still going strong. So it just depends on the individual and the and how it's effective. But the bad thing about this is that it's not contained. There's no and all those walls that you see there that have been covered in gyprock, that would be in between that gyprock, that would be the Hebel that you see there, those broken pieces. But not only that, but there's also the Hebel dust and other dust all throughout that floor, and you've got the air conditioning blowing, and obviously all that dust is going through the whole food court. So I mean, as I posted it out, and I said, how many regulations and have been broken here, and how many people have been put at danger, and do you want a do you want Hebel dust with your kebab, sir, or is that you ask for a Big Mac? Do you also said, would you like fries and a bag of Hebel dust with your Big Mac? It's crazy what goes on, what's allowed to go on. This is in the shopping center, so again, are the governments serious about doing and controlling what's going on? And if they can't control this level of renovation in a major shopping center, I mean, what controls are there? Or you can see the lack of controls that that are within the building industry in general, to promote safety or security for the rest of the population. It's crazy stuff.
It is absolutely crazy. It makes me really angry, of course. Jill died from asbestos poisoning, and there's a lot of bad practice across the building and construction industry. A lot of people are exposed to stuff they shouldn't be exposed to, and this is a classic example. Shouldn't be allowed, is being allowed, and it just shows you the low level of standards in the building sector. Now, is it bad training? Is it doing it just for the money? I don't know. But whatever it is, the bottom line is horrendous. And, I think it was worth talking about that and just highlighting the really, really, really concerning story here of dust, dust, dust. And, dust can kill. It may take some time, but it really is some pretty bad.
Well, you don't know who was affected.
No, exactly.
During that 2 weeks of that construction of what it looks like a sushi train that they're going to build there, you've had 2 weeks of exposure of that dust, and how much of it's still sitting in the intake vents from the air conditioning units. How much of that shit's still going to be floating around everywhere? So it's not just there. I mean, that dust, I can tell you, that dust is going to be in every nook and cranny of that shopping center. Who are we, man? Who are we? It's all about money. It's all about turning things over quickly. No different to what we sort of talked about last week, and that was as the cost of which you alluded to earlier on, and you said as the cost of living worsens, the government solution is to fast track high development. And with fast tracking high development, we spoke about the dangers of that and the many shortcuts that many builders will take. And guess what? I'm of the opinion that the authorities will turn a blind eye as to where they can build, how high they can go, how deep they can dig, and how quickly it's slapped up and slapped out because of the political need to produce the numbers. But the aftermath of that, Martin, is what we really want to highlight today is the Guardian article, which is really where we are. Is the lack of construction that we've had, all this the red tape that we've got, the build to rent solutions that aren't real real solutions, and the many committees that are formed. This is what you and I really have been alluding to over the years, and this is how it affects the community. Where the Guardian article says, extra 10,000 Australians becoming homeless each month, up 22% in 3 years. Reports say, and when you read that article, when you read that article and you find out that 60% or 66% or so are actually bed hopping, the extra 10,000 out of the 10,000, 6,500 or so, or 6,500 people are accounted alleged to be just bed hopping from one friend's place or relative's place to another. That's the reality. That's a reality. That is where the governments have got us. To date, they can sing their praises and beat their chests all they like about the station opening up or light rail opening up or this done or that done or cutting a ribbon for this building for that building, but this is the stark reality. That is what's really not emphasized, what's really not talked about, is how it impacts society in general, and watch this space as crime starts to really shoot up in terms of, pardon the pun, but starts to really rise, and the police force and all the other authorities are just going to be hamstrung because of the surge, because of the desperation that people are feeling, Martin.
I agree. And of course, I've shown in the past that high mortgage stress and high crime rates are correlated quite significantly as you look at this. And more people are living in cars. That report showed a lot of people were, particularly older people, are actually living in cars, particularly older females, and have nowhere to go. It's shameful. It's a failure of government policy over the years, which takes us right back to Matt Barry and what I said at the top of the show, unfortunately. Let's just quickly look at the numbers. I mean, we won't spend long on Edwin because, frankly, there's not much to see, right? Because Things are easing down now, but in Sydney on the 4th, we had 19,314, now down to 18,424. So a drop, as you said earlier on. You can see that there in the chart as we come into the end of the spring season and into the summer holidays. In Melbourne, 30,219 compared to 29,613. So still more, but easing back slightly. In Brisbane, 4,042 compared to 3,916. So each of those are showing a bit of a fall. The auctions are easing back, of course, now because people are now winding down. That's no surprise there. More people are also withdrawing their properties from the market and withdrawing their auctions. Looking at the rental properties in Sydney, 15,351 compared to 15,574. And 13,323 in Melbourne compared to 13,235. So that's the story, really. Things are cooling down, ready for the Christmas break.
Oh, look there. And it's just we're only a few weeks away from Christmas, 2 weeks away, 2 weeks away from Christmas or thereabouts. And things are going to get slowed down. But there'll still be properties on the market. And we'll still get varying stories, and we'll probably get the Tom Panos index for another week or so we can have a chuckle next week.
Yeah, very good. Well, let's just close out then with your tip of the week, Edwin, which is it's a doozy.
Look, obviously, yeah, the cryptanians are roaring at the moment. Everything's hot. I think Bitcoin went over 100,000 and peg back a little bit again or whatever. I don't really follow it through. But look, the crypto coins and tokens, it's beware of what you invest in. And I'm not, I'm not an expert in this, but I can tell you what, in the last 2 weeks, Martin, I've had three offers of to be involved in three types of, call it coins. Are they called coins? Are they that get referred to as coins, or are they tokens, or whichever one? But it's all to do with this, this hype that's because of Bitcoin get into 100,000 and other coins rallying as well. So I've been offered feel good green coin. And they sent me a white paper on it and as to why I should invest in it and get involved with it. It's to feel good, and you get a green coin apparently if you do a good deed and you go and plant a tree and you take a photo and you send it to them, whatever. I said, shit, collect rubbish. So what about if I take the rubbish out from my front yard to the street so the garbage man can collect it? Does that count? Apparently that doesn't count. So I was out. I said, that's it, I'm out. If that doesn't count, I'm out. I've also been offered an education coin. Where you participate in some education courses and then they give you a coin. But I got asked if I wanted to invest in it, and that was interesting. And also, wait for it, because it's a property show. I've also got asked to join and participate in renovation coin, where the people seek for funding from all over the world to help you renovate, and then that gets turned into a coin, blah blah blah, and then you basically loan people the money, the investors get a coin, and then you get a return on that investment as though you make a profit on loaning somebody the money, right? So to all those three, I ask the one simple question: how does that stand with ASIC, and how does that stand with the tax office? But it's just, I guess, in further conversations with one of our avid followers and listeners, a long time listener, particularly and follower of you, Martin, is Brendan, as he put it, he likened that where we are now with all these coins and everything that's coming out, he likened it to that Korean show, is it called the Squid Games, where everybody gets involved in desperation to make money, And everybody are getting involved right now in these coins and that, and throwing whatever they can into things, hoping that something's going to stick and it's going to make them an instant, not millionaire, but an instant wealth in order for them to, I don't know, get a deposit to buy a house, have something extra for a holiday. I don't know what it is, but it just seems that, and people are getting conned. I said I can't say three white papers, but got two white papers, and I'm not going to read them, obviously. But three offers of different coins. So, I mean, maybe I'm sort of leaning towards I know you're going to think that I'm leaning towards the renovation coin, but not really. I was leaning more towards the education coin. But no, look, I'm not going to take any of those three, but it's just to show that there's a lot out there, and I'm sure there's a lot more, Martin. I don't know whether you've come across any, what's happening your part of the world, but this is the latest scams that are really sucking people in.
Yeah, there are lots of scams around, and my builders have arrived, so there might be some banging in the background. But I'll just leave you with this thought, Edwin. There was an article that said shares versus property, which strategy will net better returns? Depending on how you analyze it, you can make it one way or the other. But it did make the point that shares are priced second by second, 5 days a week, whereas your average property gets valued maybe once a year. So, who knows? My view is you've got to be careful whatever you invest in, whether it's property, whether it's shares, whether it's coins, whatever. Do your due diligence. Don't get swept up in all of the hype. And the truth is that often the returns are nowhere near what's forecast. And a lot of those calculations in that article, by the way, are really, really flawed when you look at how they calculated the returns on property, for example. Lots of assumptions. And that's the other point, that quite often people make assumptions about the way things have gone. When you look carefully, often the returns on property are a lot lower. Why? Because, of course, you've got a lot of maintenance to do, because you've got to keep the property up together, and the asset devalues unless you do that. So that's my thought for the week as well. Edwin, thank you very much. Great conversation as always. I'll look forward to next week. We'll see what the Tom Panos Index says one more time. And the shenanigans continues.
All right, Martin, you take care of yourself and make sure your builders are all wearing safety harnesses and they're tied down and that they don't fall off the roof.
Oh, well, they've got full structural support. They've got boarding, and they've got rails. I'll tell you what, that's why this huge edifice sitting over my house was so big, which is why I'm pleased to see it's still there. Take care, Edwin. See you soon. Bye.
Lovely. Take care. Bye.